Hey, this is Rob Unspach, and welcome back to another edition of E-Heroes. For those keeping count, this is episode 362, and my next guest hasn't been around since episode 180. So that was 3 years ago.
My goodness.
I want to welcome back Stephen Oliver. And, you know, back then we talked about wealth, we talked about karate, we talked about all kinds of great stuff. And I see that you're smack dab in a Starbucks enjoying coffee.
I'm in the Starbucks in the People's Republic of Boulder.
I want to say thanks because, you know, a lot of people get on, they blur their backgrounds. They don't want to show what's going on. And I know that you've taken the time out of your day to be on this show, which I really appreciate. So yeah, signing in from a Starbucks, that's great. I mean, I got my Coke Zero. You got your coffee. Let's just do this.
Iced tea.
Oh, iced tea. That's what I was drinking earlier.
Yeah.
But I think that from my last interview with you, I know it's been 3 years, but I'm a lot thinner, and it's because of switching my drinks, because I was drinking iced tea like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, you know,
obviously with sugar in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So Coke Zero is, I don't drink a lot of it, but it's enough that it cuts down on the sugar intake and
yeah,
I can feel like I'm doing something for my body.
Yeah. No, I'm doing my best to be at as close to zero sugar as possible. I violated that last night with a lemon meringue pie, but other than that,
lemon meringue pie.
Yeah, yeah.
That's I'd be right there. Yeah, I can't get enough of that. My wife brought some home the other day, and she says, "How come half the pie is gone?" I don't know. Don't know.
You got caught.
I will deny I ever ate half of it, but I did have a few slices.
Yeah. There you go.
So, you know, the last time we interviewed, or I interviewed you, I think we are coming off the tail end of COVID, or maybe we're in the middle. It was 2022. Karate studios were taking a major hit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's been a great turnaround. But I also noticed that the studios that remained, the prices have gone up, you know, and we just put our grandson into karate, and they want almost $200 a month, and I'm like, what?
Well, they're charging about half of what our guys are, so
yeah. So I mean, we're in a small town, Lancaster County. Most people would say, oh, isn't that where the Amish are? And it's where the movie Witness was filmed. But, you know, so our prices are still half of what the national average is, but they're double what they used to be just a few years ago.
Yeah.
And so, but I think that you're getting that everywhere. People still think of martial arts as a commodity, not as an investment.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're talking about the school owners versus the affected students, the school owners, I think it's worse than that. You know, our mutual friend Dan Kennedy, he calls it marketing incest, where everybody looks around at what everybody else is doing and does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the pricing is the same thing. You know, they pick up the phone, they call and price shop everybody else, and then you know the worst is, they price themselves just a little bit more than, you know, the next highest guy, or they pick a middle point, or they think they're going to grow the school by pricing less, and right. and they don't realize there's a huge disconnect. You know, all of the marketing is, again, doesn't matter whether it's showing up at a live event, internal referral marketing, Facebook, other social media, Google, direct mail. All of the marketing is, you know, price blind. Right is typically what the offer is come in for a couple of free lessons, a couple of free weeks, you know, maybe a paid, you know, a short-term thing. And what they think in their mind is, at this price point, I'll get this many people. And at this price point, I'll get this many people. And, you know, I have a degree in economics. I thought that way years ago, too. You know, it's called a direct the elasticity of price versus demand, you know, a direct function. But actually, it's an inverse function. What we find every time we raise the prices, our sales ratios improve. Mm-hmm. The enrollment goes up.
Well, but when you can't lower the price and make it up in volume, it leads to burnout.
Yeah. Well, but they're not going to make it up in volume. They're going to get a certain number of people into the school, regardless of what ultimately they're going to present them as the price, right? And then the question is, if I get 30 people in this month and I present the price, what's my closing rate going to be? You know, how many of them are going to say yes? How many of them are going to say no? What we find is typically as we raise the price, the closing rate improves. Mm-hmm. And I think the business takeaway, you know, going back to, you know, I'm sure one of your favorite books, Sue, one of my favorite books is Robert Cialdini, Influence, Science, and Practice. And the very first example in the very first chapter of that book was about an inverse supply and demand function. He used an example of a gift shop out in a touristy area in Arizona. And they had these green topaz rocks or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about it. But the owner was going on vacation and left a note because they were just sitting there and not moving to, you know, drop the price in half. The employee who was there misinterpreted the note and doubled the price. The you know, owner comes back and finds they had sold it all and went, oh, well, that worked. And then figured out pretty quickly the employee had misunderstood her and doubled the price. Well, and the psychology is the same with us. I mean, if I'm the same price as everybody else, I must be like everybody else.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if I'm the most expensive in town and I, you know, can back it up with the quality of what we're doing, I must be the best, right? So, you know, it really doesn't matter whether you're talking about, you know, a Porsche versus a Subaru. You know, there's Subarus that'll do the same 0-60 as my 911 Turbo. I don't want the Subaru, right? I want the Porsche because it's, you know,
that's
higher value.
Basically how I started the cleaning business back in 95. I was the lowest priced cleaner, and all I was attracting was people that had the dirtiest, crappiest carpet that took me the longest to clean. And I thought, I can't continue to do this. So I kept raising my prices, and there I was 30% higher than the next person. And I was busier than Get Out.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, how come you're so, you know, you're more expensive than, and then I would show them everything that I'm doing. They're like, wow, they don't do that.
Yeah.
And so the reputation got behind me but when I sold the business to the guy who bought it in 2014, he tanked it within 6 months because he didn't want to keep my pricing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that syndrome any number of times. You know, people acquire businesses doing well, and then they immediately change everything. And some of my employees, you know, all of a sudden they don't want to do contracts and they want to, you know, be the cheapest in town. And that just doesn't work. You know, and again, I mean, think about things that you buy, right? I mean, if I'm buying toilet paper or paper towels or something like that, you know, I know that I can go, I don't even know any of the brands, but I can go get it at 7-Eleven or gas station shop, and I'm going to pay the highest possible price. Mm-hmm. Or I can go to the grocery store, or I can go to Whole Foods, or I can go to Sam's or Costco and buy, you know, a pallet of it practically and get the cheapest price. But I'm getting the same thing. It's a brand, but the brand, if I can compare across, it'd be like if, you know, if I wanted a new Mercedes 550 SL AMG. Well, you know, I could go look for it at three different dealers and it came off the same, you know, the same production line. But if I'm looking for a tax accountant, if I'm looking for an attorney, if I'm looking for a surgeon, if I'm looking for some other specialist doctor, or if I'm looking for a martial arts school, a yoga studio, a dance studio, you can't compare side by side. There's no standard of service delivery. There's no standard of expectation. There's no, in most cases, no brand that they already have an association of what it means, right? You know, Mercedes means high end, or Porsche means high end, or Subaru is lower middle, or whatever. So So, you know, so many of the decisions we make as business owners about pricing misses all those dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. I tell our guys when somebody comes in, they want to know whether they like the activity and want to do it, then whether they like and trust you. Mm-hmm. And if they like the activity but don't like and trust you, you're not going to get the sale. And if they don't like the activity, they're not going to get the sale. And then the next question is, can they fit it into the budget, right? Mm-hmm. But you've got to pass those two hurdles. They like what it is you're doing, and they like and trust you. So it's a relationship component. And then they're going to decide whether they can work it into the budget or not. But they're not going to be thinking about, you know, I want this person at this price, or do I want this person at this price? You know, I've had in the martial arts school now probably 35,000 students, and I remember the ones that actually did, you know, went and did legitimate price shopping, because it's so rare that it becomes a good story to tell 20 years later.
Yeah, and you know, and you apply that same premise to other services. And one of the things that I get a lot is, hey, Rob, can I do monthly payments? And I'm like, you know, I bill every 90 days. The reason I do that now is because within the first month, I'm creating all this content and I'm creating this foundation for them. And then they back out, you know, mm-hmm. and then they don't want to pay me. So mm-hmm. I collect 90 days up front, 3 months. And it's, you know, they say, well, Rob, that's a lot of money. Put it on a credit card. You mm-hmm. can pay monthly to them, not me. Yep. I'm not your bank. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it gets them to put skin in the game. It gets them to showcase that, hey, this is, or to realize that I'm putting time in to help you grow. You need to give me time to do that.
You bet.
And so, you know, a lot of people are like, well, Rob, I not only do I want the cheapest price, but I want to stretch it out forever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't have time for that. I really don't.
Yeah.
So I want every entrepreneur that's listening to understand that you set this tone for your price. You set the dynamics. It's your terms. Why do you capitulate and say, well, okay, well, yeah, whatever you want to do, just if you want to throw me a bone? And then that's how you get burned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel the same way with both with the martial arts school clients I deal with. I work with financial advisors and others as well. You know, what you've got to do is you position yourself of being of high value, mm-hmm. and then you set the terms of the engagement. And so many times what we do is we don't position ourselves as being of high value, and then we end up chasing, you know, the other person for the business. I'd much rather be hard to get rather than, you know, be chasing them. And then on the initial as well, again, using the martial arts schools as an example, they all have a tendency to want to like do practically nothing initially, come in for a month, and if you like it, you know, you keep paying. Well, we're doing maybe 800 or 900 to enroll, and then, you know, going on from there. And when they first do it, they feel like they have to justify it. And I, you know, my answer is the more words there are in the sales conversation, the more likely you are to confuse the prospect.
Right.
And then number two is I don't have to justify it. That's just the way we do it. And of course, if with any business, if you look busy, then you automatically have social proof. You know, if you're in a physical retail location, you know, they look around and there's hundreds of other people there. This must be the thing to do. You have that kind of social proof. If you're like us and, you know, you can tell I work in Starbucks or in the local coffee shop or on my deck or in my basement. But still, it's got to be. It's hard to get. It's exclusive. You have to qualify to work with me. I'm not trying to beg you to work with me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to load you up with information ahead of time. And if that's not enough to convince you, you know, I don't know what's going to convince you.
Know, let's talk about loading up with information, because here's the thing is that, you know, we have social media in front of us. We have websites, we have blog articles, we have videos. And a lot of people don't take advantage of that. They're like, yeah. Rob, I have to run ads. No, you don't. You know, all you have to do is blog about it, put your social proof out there, you know, put videos of your students performing, whatever. People see that. They see the dynamic. They see that you care enough to educate them. And then, oh, Rob, I don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, yes, you do. But they don't realize. They just want to keep spending money on ads. And I get it. It's simple. Throw some bone, you know, at Google and let them have. But you know, it's we live in now in an age. 3 years ago, nobody heard of AI. Nobody cared. Mm-hmm. Now it's everywhere, and more people are searching on AI versus Google, and all those blog articles, all that social proof gets filtered into AI, and it starts to create this dynamic of who you are, what you do, and how you show up for somebody. And you don't want to do that?
Yeah, I was just finishing up this week the first third of a book. That's the first third is all about AI search. You know, how to be found on AI, and even if they go to Google, you know, I mean, the first opening segment of Google knows they have to replace themselves pretty quickly. So Google's Gemini is finding all the information and feeding it out the top, which is as far as most people get from there, which is exactly right. Go back to what you said, though, as far as advertising. I look at it a little different way for most of our guys. Is there oftentimes advertising to get a prospect, mm-hmm. but then all this other stuff is warming that prospect up, right? If I have a service where I'm going to charge you, you know, $50,000, well, it may have a long sales cycle. It may take 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. I may need to see you over and over and over again. I need to see some proof that you're the expert. But I have to get you into my funnel to begin with somewhere, right? I have to get you following me on social media. I have to get you following the YouTube channel. I have to get you somewhere. So I'm thinking about it this way, like for myself, any new prospect that comes in, we're sending them, oh, you might want to also follow the YouTube channel. There's a lot of great information there. You might also want to follow us on LinkedIn or on Facebook or on you know, X or whatever. But we're throwing all that stuff out at them so that I'm not just pinging them on email, because, you know, I mean, email has been dying a slow and painful death for years. You know, I think COVID resurrected it, but a little bit. But what I want to do is I want to kind of get where they're seeing me everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always looking at that with our schools too. You know, if they're out marketing in an elementary school, everything I can do where the people who live in that area see them, I want them to be seen. I want to be seeing retargeting ads on Facebook and Instagram and Google. I want them to see bandit signs and rat cards and flyers. When Domino's delivers, there's a flyer for them on the box. I want them to open their mailbox and they've got something. So social media is the same way. You just want to be hitting them from every angle, mm-hmm. and get them to the point where they feel like they can't look anywhere without seeing you. You must be the guys.
Well, and also, you know, for me, I have a lot of clients who are lawyers and doctors. And so a lot of times people are searching for their name. Mm-hmm. And so I create a whole bunch of articles around the who, what, where, when, you know, all these things about that individual.
Like, yeah.
You type in, who is Rob Ansbach? Who is Stephen Oliver? Mm-hmm. You go to AI, you go to Perplexity, you go to ChatGPT. All that information needs to come up because people are searching.
Oh, yeah.
And I think people forget that. You know, well, yes, you own the studio. You are the grandmaster. You are the instructor. You're the sensei. People are searching. Okay? It's not just the school that they're searching. They're searching the people behind the school. And so, yeah. Yes, you come back to that know, like, trust, but they also have to feel safe.
Yeah, yeah, we've been saying that for years. If like on a Facebook ad, if somebody clicks on a Facebook ad, 80% more or less. I'm not sure what the current number is, but 80%, especially the soccer moms, they're going to go Google you before they do anything. And now what they're going to do? I mean, if you're going to put your kid into a long term program, you're going to go look. I go look at Claude, Perplexity, Grok, Gemini, and ChatGPT, right? So I'm going to look at what everything did. I just went through that exercise and had it write up, you know, backgrounds on some clients, which were kind of scary when you saw what it bit out that they knew about them. But, you know, on me and Jeff Smith, who works for me, and, you know, and a couple of others. And you're right. If it goes, well, who is that? You've got a problem. On the other hand, they come out with all kinds of references and spitbacks. I had it, a copy secret, by the way, I just been experimenting with. I thought it came out great. Is I told them all to go find every bit of customer feedback, reviews, and so forth, And then I went through and copied all the LinkedIn, all of the Facebook, reviews, all the Google reviews, everything else, plus anything I had. I fed it all to Claude and say, come up with, from a client perspective, what the structure or value and outcome is of our program. And it took, 500 testimonials, more or less, synthesized them, and then wrote it from a client perspective and came up with just an incredible output. But so much of this stuff, I think what people try to do when they're using AI for their business, they say, hey, write me a sales letter for X. Well, you're going to get the mediocre majority. It's going to go copy five people's mediocre website. But if I go in and say, here's my material, here's what my clients say about me, here's some of my books, you've written how many jillion books now, 50 or something like that,
61. Yeah.
61. There you go. Yeah. But you feed all that stuff into it, and they say, feed it back in my voice, feedback from a client voice and perspective, what the value of what I do, you get, really good output.
Yeah. Cause it starts to learn your personality. It learns your tone and your voice, and it creates content that people can relate to, because now when they read this, they're like, oh, okay. It sounds the same as if I met this person in real life.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. You want something that's believable, that sounds like, and AI does wonderful things. One of the things I don't like is that people are taking all this AI and creating these videos that look like them, but the eyes aren't blinking, the facial features are kind of frozen, and it's just the lips and the teeth move, and it's like, come on, stop. Yeah. Give us real videos. Give us your humanity, because that's what we want to see. And I just made this video the other day because somebody had emailed me and they said, Rob, look at our sales page. Tell us what's wrong. And all they had was this boxy form you had to fill out. And then it went to an AI, and the AI did the circular conversation that just let you out of this endless loop. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what? Get rid of the submit button. Just put a contact, call us. Mm-hmm. He says, yeah, but we don't answer our phone. I said, well, that's your problem.
Fix that. Yeah, fix that.
Granted, I got 71 spam calls yesterday, which nobody should ever have to deal with. But we're missing that human connection. And every karate studio out there, yes, AI is great. Have someone there answer your phone, because people have questions.
Well, I could go back to 35 or 40 years. What I knew even back then is that most, when we were predominantly in the kids markets, is most moms were going to call us between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. And most martial arts schools weren't opening until 3 to 5. And their phones were back then on an answering machine with a little cassette tape the rest of the times. So the very first thing I made sure we were doing is staffing up our office so that basically 8 a.m. until 9 p.m. we were answering the phones. And I had learned that from my organization I'd worked with in Washington. They put me on the switchboard for a while, and I figured that out. But the dynamic then was non-working mom drops the kids off at school, goes back, sorts through the stuff that's sitting on the kitchen table to be doing, or goes through her little notebook and starts making calls. Working mom took the kid to school, went in and checked her email, checked if she had any meetings or anything, and then went in her office and returned business calls and started returning personal calls. And, if I was the guy who they left a message on my voicemail at 10 a.m. and I didn't get back to them until the next day sometimes or that night, I lost the sale, right? Mm-hmm. So, we had to make sure. And then we went to 24 hours, because we would do, 8 or 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and then, a live answering service or something like that overnight. But with a trained script, they weren't nearly as good as our staff. But you've got to be immediately receptive on inbound. And again, if you go back advertising wise, the internet age, in some ways it's a blessing. You can Facebook message people, you can LinkedIn message people, you can text them and all that shit. But if I could go back to, I place an ad, they call me, a human being talks to a human being, and that was the only method, I would be so much happier. It was so much more effective. I knew we're going to get 70 calls. We're going to make 60 appointments. 50 of them are going to show up. You know, I mean, I the numbers are right there. Now you get a form submitted, and you know, you have to be responsive within, you know, what we tell our guys, you got to be calling them while they're looking at the page. Mm-hmm. And whatever they land on has got to be encouraging them to call you. So you've got to be that responsive, or else they're locked.
Yeah. And sometimes we can load up our websites with chatbots, and we can do this and we can do that, and it looks and sounds amazing. However, if we're taking the human element out of it, you know, we're going to lose people right away. And people are like, oh, Rob, yeah, but this is supposed to make life easier. Who's it making life easier for? The marketer or the consumer? Because you're going to lose people. I get it. But, you know, lose them on a term that at least you picked up the phone and you answered their questions. And if that fails, okay, you lost them. But don't lose them because of a chat bot. Don't lose them because, you know, your form got sent to email hell. Lose them because it was a valid reason.
Yeah.
I don't, I'm a marketer. I love some of the new stuff that's out there. I really do. But I'm also a human. And you know, I found that over the last year, people just want to connect with your voice.
Oh yeah. Well, they want authenticity.
Yeah.
And they want to interact with a human being. And again, you don't want to create a situation where you have to chase them down. You know, you want to get it where they're reaching out to you, they're connecting, and then you're off the rails.
Yeah, and I think sometimes too, and I did this about a month ago. I gave somebody this awesome proposal, and I thought, wow, this, you know, I'm making every attempt to answer all their questions. I had three price points that, you know, I think it was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, my lowest price is matching what they're getting now for somebody that, you know, was delivering half-assed service, and then I had a higher price, but because of my billing 90 days, they're like, well, that's three times more, and I got an outlay. Mm-hmm. And I think they were afraid to relinquish the half-assed service to pay triple for a 90-day service that they were unsure of.
Yeah.
And so I said to my wife, I said, what's wrong with this? She says, well, I wouldn't read it. It's too long.
Yeah, it's too complicated. Yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah, but I thought I was. So, yeah, and I looked at him like, ah, it's garbage.
Yeah.
So, we marketers, we make mistakes. And, you know, we look at the situation going, okay, you know, in our minds, that should be appealing. But really, what we want to do is make it as easy as possible for somebody to say yes to us.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what else are you finding this? Go ahead.
Oh, good. You know, I think a couple of years ago when we spoke, the Cobra Kai series was in its heyday, and mm-hmm. The Karate Kid movie Legends just came out with Jackie Chan and Ralph Macchio. And I have yet to see it, although I've seen clips of it on YouTube. And every time, you know, these types of martial arts films come out, I know that schools, well, they should kind of use that momentum to gain students. Have you seen it?
Well, you know, the guys I'm working with are doing great. Whether we saw a particular blip, you know, the first Karate Kid series, you know, turned martial arts into the kid market. I mean, I was right in the middle of going from location 3 to location 4 when the first Karate Kid movies came out. And I knew enough even then to by the weekend it was opening, I had posters in the movie theaters. I had booths in the movie theaters. I was had the theaters giving out guest passes. I think I had 13 booths. You know, I had locations all over town. And back then, the movie theaters were smaller, right? It wasn't the big multiplexes. And that movie, you know, it probably created 5,000 enrollments for me. I think it probably put at least $5 million into my bank account. You know, but it was tying into it. This one, I don't think it has the same cultural impact. People are kind of used to it and over it. Our guys were doing promotions in the movie theaters. Even if the movie didn't do particularly well, it did fine. They made money, but it didn't do, you know, it wasn't a blockbuster. Right. But it was surrounded by two different, one was Mulan, I think, or Moana. Yeah. I confuse them. But there was two big blockbusters that were kids' movies that surrounded it. So if they were there, they were benefiting from all of that traffic. I think when we talked about Cobra Kai, I absolutely hate the series. I think it's as a martial arts school owner, you know, karate gang fights is not exactly helpful for the image. The movie I thought was really good, and the series, if somebody hasn't seen the last four episodes, I thought they wrapped it up really nicely. They did a good job of kind of bringing it back to the roots and recognizing Miyagi and so forth. What I said about the series always is what made the movies was never Daniel, it was Miyagi.
Right.
Right? It was the philosophy. You know, I remember there's a scene on the boat, and Daniel, why are we learning karate? We're learning karate to fight. No, Mr. Miyagi, we're learning so we don't have to fight. It was all that philosophy, which was totally and completely missing from 99% of the Cobra Kai series. Right. It was just a disaster. The writing was abysmal. But you know, to some extent it gets interest. I remember Chuck Norris is a friend of mine, and he did a movie called Sidekicks, which was basically Karate Kid, but it wasn't Karate Kid. You know, Joe Piscopo was doing it one thing or another. And I was at his ranch, and I said, you know, you should know better. You started out, you ran a chain of schools. You know, you're a legitimate martial artist. Why does these kids' martial arts movie, you have the drunk janitor and the drunk, you know, chef or, you know, kitchen help are the mentor, and the commercial martial arts guys are the evil guys? You know, what the hell, Chuck? You know, why, you know, what the hell? He just kind of laughed, you know, because, but that was the formula, right? Mr. Miyagi was, you know, a janitor, and he was drunk, and he kind of rose to the occasion. And then the remake, you know, Jackie Chan was the same, you know, same thing. And the commercial guy was Cobra Kai, you know, who was the evil ex-Marine. And then with Chuck Norris's thing, Joe Piscopo was the commercial guy who was the evil. That's a little overly analytic, but you know, from the standpoint of the plot outline, I always took exception to that.
For me, Chuck Norris was the ultimate action hero, from Missing in Action to Invasion USA, and I think there was a few others in there, and then he became softer with these other movies, and it's like, dude, I don't care about your soft side, just kick ass. And then you saw him in Expendables, I think one of the movies, and
mm-hmm.
and now he's just aging gracefully you know, or selling exercise equipment or nutritional supplements. And it's like, dude, get back to action movies.
Well, Walker, Texas Ranger was a great second act. Right. So, in fact, the time I was talking about it at his ranch, the weekend he signed the contract for Walker, Texas Ranger. And that really made his career. And then the production company, I think it was in the middle of the first season, who are the same guys, Cannon, who had done his movies, if I remember the story correctly, they had gone out of business, and he ended up taking over the entire production.
People listening, I want to clarify, Walker, Texas Ranger was an awesome series. This new series called Walker is horrible. Not even the same.
It's the DEI version of Walker, Texas Ranger, right? I don't know how that happened, but it is horrible. But the one with Chuck Norris was wonderful.
Yeah. So we have a few more minutes. Any last words of wisdom that you want to impart?
Well, yeah, I think that we were talking about AI and online marketing and so forth. And one of the first things I think for business owners to do, and this is going to sound like totally self-contradictory, but is always stay with the leading edge and remember that stuff that worked 20 years ago in most cases still works. Mm-hmm. And so human nature doesn't change. So sales processes that worked 20 years ago, 40 years ago still work. In many cases, they work better. Talking, as you mentioned, talking to a live human being on the phone is more impactful than it is today. Direct mail, you know, my inbox, I rarely look at it. Hell, I had to ping you because the Zoom link for today was in my email box. Mm-hmm. A piece of direct mail in the mailbox is going to be there with four other pieces of mail, and it's fairly easy to stand out. An email is going to be there with 200 pieces of email, and they're already in a bad mood when they're looking at their email because they don't want to deal with it, right? So what had a tendency to happen, I've had a lot of my clients who were like clients 10 years ago come back, and you know, their business has gone like this. And oftentimes the reason it's gone like this is they're fixated on, you know, the only marketing we have is like search and online. It's like, well, no, I had to doing all these other things before. None of them stopped working. In fact, they all work better than they ever did. Let's have this be a component, but let's have this be a component, this be a component. One of the terms, I stole this from Jay Abraham, but I was doing it, you know, long before I ever knew he existed, was the Parthenon. You know, I always want to have like 20 different things going on to drive traffic, right? And so what people get is they get fixated on the latest, greatest thing, and they forget there's still this whole sequence of other things that you can do and have done that worked great. You know, with carpet cleaning, I mean, I see it in my neighborhood, you know. It's a all on like 5 acre plots and, you know, big houses. But if there's somebody up there working, you know, the smart ones, they go knock on the doors and say, I'm doing the driveway for this guy, or I'm doing the roof for this guy. And I noticed, you know, and if you don't answer, they should hang something on the door, or leave a package. Well, you know, the same one, somebody at the corporate spending 12 hours a day doing Facebook ads, and they forgot that maybe we could just do the whole neighborhood, right? Realtors have always known this. As soon as I get that listing, let's see if we can list the whole neighborhood. In fact, you know, the board of realtors always had I forget what their terminology was, but they actually kind of boycotted, you know, trying to dominate neighborhoods because it's such a useful tool. You know, we forget that so much of what worked 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago still works.
Yeah.
I used to run a lot of infomercials, maybe don't work quite the same way anymore. TV channels, you know, I mean, I don't think I even have broadcast TV at my house. You know, everything I watch is streaming, and whether it's the, you know, Cobra Kai series or what, which again, you know, but whether it was the Cobra Kai series or whether, and you're a Bruce Lee fan. Have you seen that? What is it called? The series that Bruce Lee wrote for himself that's on, I think it was on HBO and now it's on Netflix.
No.
Yeah, no, his daughter finally put it together and got it out into production. And it's about Chinatown in the near post-Civil War, building the railroad era in San Francisco. And the lead character was written to be Bruce Lee. It's really good. Warrior or something like that.
Oh, I did. I think I did watch an episode my wife's like, what are you watching? Because there was a lot of adult scenes.
Yeah.
And she thought I was watching something else.
The whole series has not a lot of nudity and sex, but has, you know, obviously a lot of violence. It was written for Bruce Lee to be the lead character.
I guess I didn't put two and two together.
So. Yeah.
I'm like, Whoa.
Well, it's like that, you know, the old Kung Fu series was written, you know, was put together for Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And then the network refused to, you know, gas the Chinese guy. In his role, so slappingly, they gassed David Carradine.
Yeah. So where do people find you? Where do they go?
Besides Starbucks. Besides Starbucks. You know, one of the sites is failureschool.com. If somebody runs a martial arts school or a similar business, a dance school, yoga, you know, whatever it might be. We have music schools, dance schools, and so forth. It's got my newest book, you know, there for free as a digital download and just a ton of other stuff all for free. Obviously, that puts them in the funnel to follow and pay attention. And if they're a good fit to, you know, come work with me. I work with financial advisors also. That one's advisorwealthmastery.com. And there's, again, you know, the marketing book I did for financial advisors. There's probably, like you, I have about four books that are somewhere between 30% and 90% done. I just got to, you know, get them out the door. What's that?
Who writes books anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually partnered with somebody and we wrote an AI book called AI Advantages and, yeah. And how small businesses can outrank big businesses. Just, you know, using blogging and social proof and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have this whole series of Can Go to Hell books, which is consumer advocacy.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I've discovered is that people don't want to read anymore. And it's sad. They just want instant information.
Mm-hmm.
But they want it in audio. They want it in video. And I would appreciate people that could read, that took the time to, you know, and this is why I have a whole bunch of books on my website for free. You don't want to spend the money. There you go. Have at it. Download them. Read them whenever you can. And now you can just put them in, put the PDF in, and it'll read to you.
Yeah.
There you go.
I will say, as a marketing tool, though, nothing replaces I mail you a physical copy of the book.
That's right.
Right. And, you know, if I have, I don't know, I read with a Kindle. I probably have 863 books on the Kindle. None of them ever, you know, I glance at it on the desk while I'm using it as a coaster and reminds me that I wanted to connect with somebody, right? And I can't tell you how many clients I've had. You know, one that I can think of, Stephen down in Florida, you know, things went kind of sideways and he looked up on the shelf and saw my book and said, maybe I should call that guy.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely true that getting somebody to sit down and read 300 pages, but when you put out the book as a marketing tool, I don't expect them to read it, yeah. Right? I expect them to be impressed that I mailed them this thing. And, you know, the front section and the back section is going to have, you know, unlimited testimonials and feedback and so forth. But mostly I'm expecting it's going to sit on their desk until I've pummeled them into submission.
You know, and I can't tell you how many clients I've gotten from somebody reading a Kindle, but I can tell you how many I've gotten when they've gotten the physical book.
Yeah.
And when someone calls me from Norway and they say, you know, I found your book in this little bookshop.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hire you.
Yeah.
To me, that's the ultimate thank you. Because, you know, they're thousands of miles away in a country that speaks a different language and they're reading my book and they want to hire me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't get that with a Kindle. I'm sorry, but.
No.
You just,
I think it's a different type
of person.
Anything that's on my Kindle that I'm not currently reading, I've immediately forgotten about.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. You know, I've got, I don't know how many PDF books on my laptop that I'm on here. But occasionally I stumble across them, but you know, it certainly doesn't stick. I don't slap it around in my briefcase to get around to it. It's not sitting on my desk. Hell, it's not a coaster, you know, so it doesn't have anywhere near the same effect.
Well, there you go. This is what makes Stephen an e-hero, and he's always welcome back. And just the fact that you know Chuck Norris, that's just
there you go. There you go.
So
well, good. Let's do this more frequently.
Yeah, and let's not wait 3 years. So
yeah,
I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode. Adios.